Welcome back to Art's About.
There's that voice, the show about art that's a work of art in itself, and welcome back, Sally.
Thanks, John. It's great to be back.
Air New Zealand back?
Yes, New Zealand. I've made it back from the wilds of California, and very glad to be here too, presenting Art's About, which is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio.
Very welcome back you are too.
Well, I've had a fabulous time in San Francisco and the wilds of Yosemite and the Napa Valley, the wilds of the alcohol-ridden Napa Valley.
Wineries, you mean?
Sensational wineries down there. But I also was incredibly lucky to be in San Francisco just after the San Francisco MoMA reopened after its three-year renovation. And that was quite spectacular. I'm sure we'll dredge up a few things to talk about over the next few weeks about some of the things we saw there, John.
You showed me some photographs of the national park.
Yes, Ansel Adams-style photographs that I took.
And it's very neat-looking park, isn't it? It's sort of, I know it's a national park, but it's a very neat-looking place. Unlike our own national parks, like an Australian wilderness can be quite a kind of...
Yes, that's right. In fact, we discussed that a little bit while we were over there with a friend, Jane Christmas, who we'd gone to visit. And it's really interesting because... I think that the sensibilities of Europeans and Americans with the kind of landscapes that they have would look at our Australian landscapes and be slightly horrified about the mess, you know, the litter from the gum trees and so on.
A lot of stuff lying on the ground.
Yeah, everything falls down.
Stuff just recklessly thrown around.
It's quite different. I mean, they lose their leaves in autumn, of course, but they rot very quickly and disappear. It does. It is very, very neat.
Yeah, you can imagine sort of... with those logs nicely placed on the ground, that you know, the bears would sit around there with their legs crossed eating lunch.
Exactly, eating your lunch. Everywhere you go in Yosemite, there are signs saying, do not put food down, do not leave your food more than sort of an arm's length away from you. Right. Do not leave food in your cars at all. You can't even leave face cream in your car.
Because they rip the door.
Well, apparently.
Or use it.
Yeah, apparently they do. Anyway, we better get on to things here. So we've got a very, very interesting show for you today. Firstly, we've got the creative director of CPS, a company in Melbourne, and we've got the CEO of that, Christian Wagstaff, and he's designed the most amazing House of Mirrors that's going on into Dark Park at Dark Mofo in a couple of weeks. And I recorded an interview with him about it before I went away. So we'll play that. And we've also got Kate Fryer, who is a performer and director of If These Walls Could Talk, and that's a production that's coming in for one night only into the Frankston Arts Centre on June the 9th. And she's going to talk to us about that.
Great.
I suspect Cliff will be in.
Yes.
Although you never know.
You never know. I'll keep my eye on the foyer area out there.
Yes, very good. And so while we line up Christian Wagstaff interview, here's Richard Hell and the Voidoids with Blank Generation. I'm not sure why I'm playing it, but I haven't heard it in a while.
That's a good enough reason.
Well, as I mentioned, I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with friend Christian Wagstaff, who is the creative director of CPS, Creative Production Services, which is a company in Melbourne. And Christian has designed and is in the processes, right as we speak, of implementing a House of Mirrors in Dark Park, which is part of the MoNA Dark Mofo.
Mirrors and reflections and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And you, as a result of pre-recording this, are in your own continuing time warp.
Yes, indeed I am. Exactly. Take it away, Brody. Dark Mofo 2016 is fast approaching. And as our regular listeners will no doubt be aware, I am an avid MoNA subscriber and have been anticipating Dark Mofo 2016 since 2015 finished. When this year's program was announced, I was beside myself to discover two names I recognised in the list of contributing artists. Christian Wagstaff and Keith Courtney from Creative Production Services are presenting House of Mirrors in Dark Park. And today I have the creative director and designer of House of Mirrors with me sitting here. Christian Wagstaff, thank you so much for talking to us today on Arts About.
My absolute pleasure.
Christian, it's just interacting with the MoNA team, or empire perhaps as I should call it, as a punter, is pretty controversial. What's it like, the full immersion?
Well, do you mean dealing with the actual dealing company? With,
yeah, dealing with.
Well, they're extraordinary, aren't they? And yeah. It's so nice to deal with a group of people that have embraced a concept and really sort of given us carte blanche on how to put it together. So they're very trusting.
Mm-hmm.
And they go with gut feel. And when we presented the concept to them, they loved it straight away. So far, so good.
Mm. Well, how has that process panned out? Because you and I met last year at Dark Mofo.
Yes.
And as it turns out, you were scouting.
Yeah, we were.
You were. So what's been the process of actually getting your piece included?
We saw you down there in 2015, and as you say, an extraordinary program, and we were absolutely blown away. Keith and I went down to have a look, and we'd been to Mona many times, and we'd heard that we hadn't been to the Mona FOMA Festival, the summer one. They're both called MOFO now.
Yeah.
And we'd heard about Dark MOFO, and when they launched the program last year, thought, wow, straight away we have to go. And Anting the Johnsons was programmed musically.
Oh, no, which was so amazing, wasn't it?
So that was our main draw card to go down.
Same.
So we booked it straight. We managed to get tickets. We couldn't believe it. And then we saw you down there and had an absolute ball and were blown away by the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And a festival that, I live in Melbourne, as you do, and Melbourne has plenty of festivals, but we're a little bit obsessed with weather here. If it's a little bit cold and chilly and windy, people tend to complain. So what I loved about the festival down there was it's midwinter, solstice, of course, and no one whinges about the weather.
Yes.
They totally embrace it. So, everyone just rugs up. If it's raining, it doesn't matter.
It was pouring as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we were absolutely blown away by the energy, the creativity, the diversity of the work, the broad, powerful brushstrokes of works that were in there that were really, really quite simple and dark, of course.
Yeah, very dark.
Yeah.
Well, last year I think it was, sex and death, wasn't it? And this year it's more about that. I think the theme is tempest and storm, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Well, we love a storm.
Yeah, we do. We had a good one just recently.
Yeah, we did. The process, once we went down, we really eager to get involved, not only with the festival, but Mona in general, of course. And we threw a few ideas around and we let them sit for a while. And, we contacted some people internationally, on bringing them down. Various concepts, quite diverse. And then all of a sudden, House of Mirrors popped into our mind and we knew straight away it was going to work.
Mm.
And Dark Mofo is a perfect platform for it. We want to travel around the world, but we were absolutely adamant that we'd pitch it to Dark Mofo first because we knew it was a really good fit.
Thinking about Dark Park last year and there were all those audio installations
that
were there.
Bath,
oh
incredible.
My god, which was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And
then
and Bastien Maris's fire organ and so on. But
Anthony McCall, amazing.
Yes.
One of the best light artists in the world. Yep.
And now this one, Mirrors, which really mucks around with your senses in a different way, really. It's really playing with your mind. It's really, really mucking around with senses, isn't it?
Well, we've called it House of Mirrors because we didn't want to call it a mirror maze, even though it actually is a mirror maze in its purest form. And we like the idea of House of Mirrors because it has this, and you've seen the sample one-to-one scale model here at the studio. It has this sort of ominous sort of exterior structure, so it looks like a sort of a haunted house on a hill in a way, suggestive of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this big, huge, it could be an industrial structure or a sunken ship or a huge mansion. And then that's all sort of rotting on the outside.
Oh.
So the whole idea of House of Mirrors is reminiscent of the haunted house down the road when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think
and the horror movies
and
that
the horror
watched.
Movies, of course.
Yeah.
House on Haunted Hill, a wonderful film. And So Mirror Maze is obviously the idea that we pitched. So, but we wanted to put it inside a structure because Dark Park was really the space that we wanted to be in. When we talked to them, there was a few ideas thrown around as to where to place it. And where, Mona's fantastic because they said, well, where do you want it? And they said, well, we're really keen to have it in Dark Park. And they agreed. And so we're in the same spot as the organs were last year. It's an outside structure. So it's this big sort of dark, rotting, ominous structure sitting in that position that's got sort of not much going on around it.
Open to the sky.
Oh, yeah, so no roof. So it's an outdoor mirror maze.
Right.
That if it's pouring with rain,
yeah,
it'll actually affect the experience in a brilliant way. It'll actually transform it. So,
That was something that actually really did work, I think, was just being sopping wet and running from the weather last time. How amazing. Well, for our listeners, I have just been down into Creative Production Services warehouse workshop and walked into a little part of the maze. And the thing that really staggered me, Christian, was the scale of it. Because the mirrors are, how many metres tall are they? 8 metres? We don't say?
No, we don't talk dimensions because it'll ruin the illusion.
Okay, of course. All right, so no numbers. But let me say it's really big and it's really substantial.
Well, the one-to-one model that you walk through is four mirrors and we're doing about, I can give a figure here.
Can you?
It's about, it's over 80.
Yep.
And so, just with the four mirrors, the experience that you walk through, it's incredible how expansive the space is.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the TARDIS. You go in and it's this, everything's quadrupled or...
Infinity. It goes to infinity, exactly.
And we've followed the very old traditional format of a mirror maze. A lot of people assume mirror mazes are... square format, but we've gone with the triangular format, equal sides. So there's 60 degrees and 120 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's all, and you create all these octagonal spaces and triangular spaces. Hope I'm getting my geometry right.
Yes. Well, it's 360s degrees. Each one is 60
that's
degrees.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
An equilateral triangle.
Equilateral. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's repeated ongoing. So that's what really throws people.
Yes.
Is you really don't know which direction to go in.
You're right. It is just like the TARDIS because Christian showed me a little a small model as well that I looked into, which was this triangular room that you peer into, and it actually goes for infinity. So although it's physically a very small space, visually it just goes on forever.
Yes.
It's really, really spectacular.
Yes, yes.
You've been planning this for some time. When does it head off?
It's early May now. We're shipping, because of course, to do a project in Tasmania, it's an island.
Yes.
So it's not like you can just load it onto
trucks.
It's got to
go by ferry.
So it's got to go by ferry in containers.
Yep.
So we've got to have it, that's all scheduled. So it's scheduled down to the wire. So we've got to have everything loaded in about 3 weeks. And then we've got a good 2 week period to build it, which is sort of quite luxurious in some ways. A lot of projects we work on, we get 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 days at the most, but we've got a good 2 weeks at it. But we've deliberately scheduled it that way because it hasn't been done before on this sort of scale. Mm. So, and it's outdoors as well, and it's Tasmania. Mm-hmm. So if
it's
we get bad
tough.
Weather and high winds, then we'd have to stop work and wait. And because they're huge panels of glass, if the wind catches them, you don't want them.
So are you using a crane?
Yeah, we've got a crane, all local suppliers. So we're using a massive crane company down there. And they tilt slabs.
They're used to all of that sort of stuff.
So we'll be way more nervous than they are. They know what they're doing. But it's been configured in a way where it's quite modular. So it's all steel and glass and timber, mainly steel and glass. And it's done in a way where it all sort of clips into space.
It's really interesting to me, this this change over the last 20 years, I suppose. A lot of artists have probably found the evolution kind of difficult. But art, public art has really changed, hasn't it? In that it's becoming much, much more experiential and less something that you observe. It's something that you participate in.
Yes, very much so.
And I think that in a way that's really what
really blurring the lines too.
Yes, because it's something that can't necessarily be recreated. It's actually something that you've got to experience.
Yes.
Now, this is an area that you work in a lot,
yes,
I think, because
commercially,
yes, yeah. That's right. And I think that that's, I mean, because an awful lot of work that is of this form has to be created commercially because it's very, very expensive. It's big and it has to accommodate lots and lots of people. So, but it's very interesting how you do that because you're clearly an artist. I mean, you're working in a
thank you
in a very creative field, but you're. It's the new model of funding, isn't it? I mean, in some respects, that's almost what's been reflected in our latest budget, although all the artists are freaking out about it, is that art needs to be funded by private means and funded through corporate means. I mean, you'd be terribly thankful for that, of course, wouldn't you?
Oh,
I mean,
gosh, yes.
That's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
So your company, Creative Production Services, we're sitting in the...
CPS. Because it's such a long title.
CPS, that's a much better way of saying it, yes, of course. Up here in North Melbourne. But you work all over. Don't you?
Yeah, we work all over the country. We do work in Perth, Sydney, Melbourne mainly. Now, thank God, Hobart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we build most of our work here in Melbourne. So we've got a workshop studio here where we have certain skills set here of sculpting, painting, etc. And then we get, you know, heavy metal work done in places like Geelong. So we've got, you know, contacts and contractors all over the place, and then we bring it all together here and then load it onto trucks, and we've got a great logistics crew that then send it off to other cities and then we set it up there.
Do you bring other artists in? Do you?
We collaborate with a lot of artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of, you know, some time ago we were sort of slipping into a bit of an event company and, and sort of, you know, wanted to sort of move away from that. Even when we did events, we'd often collaborate with artists on how the event looked, you know, on decoration, etc. But we do love collaborating with artists. We've had some great experiences over the years. Patrick Doherty, who's an incredible willow stick artist, who does those huge sculptural works
all over the world. Oh, the kinetic ones?
No, they're more interwoven. He's an American artist from... I think South Carolina or North, I can't never remember.
Let's just say Carolina.
Yeah, from Carolina. And we brought him down, this was probably 6 years ago now, to Fed Square. We built this extraordinary structure that sat there for 5 months. Yeah, and Patrick Doherty is really one of the original willow stick sculptors or weavers, and he does these huge structures. So, you know, we collaborate with artists all over the world and bring them in. We've yet to create something ourselves and take it out of Australia. So
possibly now.
Yes.
Well, I'm so excited about the whole Dartmofo. I just can't wait to get there. But I'm really, really excited to see yours. Probably like most people listening to this, we all have memories, childhood memories of those things. But to see it on this scale is really something else.
Yes.
I'd love to have a chat with you perhaps when we get down to Mona, once I've been in there. So thank you so much for talking to us today on Arts About Christian Wagstaff.
My pleasure.
And now it's time for John On.
Woohoo!
Yeah, there it is. The sting. Many years ago, it's interesting to have to say that many years ago, but you know, and perhaps hard to imagine, but I was a young man in Barcelona. An arrogant young man, as it turns out.
I find that really hard to believe, John.
Well, some arrogance arrived, you know, or appeared or was manifest. And I was in Barcelona with an Australian journalist who was writing about the Olympic Games in Barcelona.
So that must have been in 1992 or something. Oh, I was there then.
It was before that because she was writing about them preparing for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So it was in fact 1989.
Oh, it was a fair way beforehand.
Yeah,
okay.
And they were ripping the beach to bits at the time.
Yep.
And we, as a part of what she was doing, had a long lunch with some Basque separatists.
Oh, Basque separatists. Yeah. Yes, ETA.
And as part of that conversation, I was talking to a fellow there who told me that what was generally at the time referred to as the wrong part of town in Barcelona, mm-hmm. which was between the Ramblas and the bottom of Montjuïc.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
He said people don't go in there because they're scared of that part of Barcelona. Right. And he said there's nothing to be afraid of. The people in there might show you a knife.
Right.
And demand your money, but they're not going to hurt you. In other words, they might mug you.
Right.
Take your money, but then no one is going to
hurt
you. It's
not going to go too far.
They're not going to go too far.
Right.
So I took him at his word.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, that'd be thrilling. I could get mugged.
Never been mugged before?
I've never been mugged. So I loaded my pockets with as much money as I was prepared to be
mugged
for. And made my way into the wrong part of town.
Right. At night, obviously.
At night, yeah. And I had a wonderful time. You know, everyone was lovely. You know, there were some great little bars over in there, and it was really a terrific part of town, and I had a really, really nice time. When at the end of the evening, which was in fact at about 1:30 in the morning, or perhaps nearly 2, I was making my way.
So you were by yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going back to the hotel I was staying in the Gothic Quarter.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And a motorbike sort of came down the little street behind me, and I stopped and turned around and looked at the fellow riding the bike, and he came straight towards me, stopped the motorbike a couple of metres short of me and got off the bike, looking at me the whole time. And I thought, oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah. You know?
And he walked towards me, reached into his pocket, and I thought, he's going to show me the knife.
Wow, they were right.
But rather than a knife, he pulled out a great big iron key, and he walked past me about a metre and dropped to his knees in the lane, and he opened a small door in the lane with this great big iron key, and there's a little wooden door about a metre high.
We're in Alice in Wonderland now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he opened that up, and inside was a little alcove with a statue of the Virgin Mary, and he lit the candles inside and started praying.
Good heavens.
About 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's not going to mug you at all. You were ripped off.
My thoughts exactly, you know. Come out to get mugged and all I'd been robbed of was my dignity, you know. But
that is so funny.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Did you speak to him at all?
No, I couldn't. I didn't know what to say to him, you know.
He was probably
what do you say?
Spanish,
what are you
anyway?
Doing out here at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Aren't you going to mug me?
I did afterwards think, you know, it's. No, you wonder how many people know about those little doors and those. What a. Quite probably 18th century Virgin Marys sitting in those little alcoves, and you know, art theft springs to mind.
Yes, how interesting. I had never I mean, I love the doors. I love Spanish doors generally.
Yeah.
They're always fantastic.
Yeah.
And those cities hold these extraordinary little secrets, but I've actually never imagined that there were private shrines behind some of them.
Yeah, I don't think the city is full of them, but there's certainly a number of them around. I did ask someone about whether or not they have theft or the theft is an issue, and he said you'd be surprised how strong those doors are. You know, it's a fair bit of iron mixed in with the wood.
How fabulous. Well, did you ever get mugged in the end?
No.
Damn. Oh, well. Well, listen, we better move on. Brody's gesturing me.
Is he trying to mug me?
Maybe he is. Here's a track from The Boys Next Door, another oldie but a goodie with Shivers.
Yeah.
And I'll get Kate Fryer on the phone in a moment. On Thursday the 9th of June at the Frankston Arts Centre, Dislocate presents If These Walls Could Talk. If These Walls Could Talk is a physical theatre performance that delivers its message not through words but with movement, dance and music. It suggests that to live in a house is to paint it with memories that inhabit the walls as surely as any ghost does. It's an intricate mesh of slapstick theatre, circus skills and storytelling, and brings to life stories inhabiting a single apartment. Together with her business partner, Jeffrey Dunstan, artistic director of Dislocate, Kate Fryer, created this production that has already had a season at Gasworks this month, and it comes to Frankston for one night only. And she's joined us on the program this morning to tell us a bit more about it. Good morning, Kate Fryer.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for talking to us today on Arts About.
Well, thank you for calling. It's lovely to be here.
Kate, it's a very intriguing story parameter. Tell us about the story.
So the basic premise in the end is that if you have lived your life to the full and your walls did at the end, you know, deliver your eulogy, what would you like them to say? And the major point we're trying to make is that every moment is precious, and whatever happens within life, you know, there will be mundane moments, there will be extreme moments of joy and pleasure, and there'll be everything in between. And that, you know, in the end, you want the walls to reflect that. You want them to reflect a life well lived, a life that you go out with no regrets.
A little bit like atomic memory in homeopathics, is that there's a sort of a remnant left of what happened in them.
That's right. Mm. And, you know, in this show we do, you know, there is a very full trajectory. You meet six different tenants within the one apartment over many generations, and there is a very special payoff at the end where we really give that sort of sense of an energy that has been left within the space through all those years, and they do have quite an effective ending to the very final piece of the work.
Mm. Now, you are an aficionado, I think, of physical theatre. You've been a director and a teacher of circus skills and a performer yourself. And I think that you have worked in lots of different companies that probably many of our listeners would be familiar with, like Circus Oz and Rock and Roll Circus, which I think is now called Circa.
Yes.
Circus Entropy.
Yes.
The Queensland Theatre Company, Australian Shakespeare Company. These days, though, you're running your own company. How did that come about, and are you devising your own work now?
Yes. So Dislocate has actually been around now for quite a long time. We've been going for 17 years. And we, after having worked, I trained as an actor, as did Jeffrey. And after having worked in theatre for a long time, we both discovered circus and physical theatre. And we were completely blown away by the 1996 Adelaide Festival, mm-hmm. and a company called Deviate had come out, as well as a company called La Fura del Baus. And they were both telling these incredible stories, but in a very three-dimensional way. And it inspired both of us to go. Jeffrey actually had always been a gymnast, and I'd done lots of physical work, but not to the same extent. So we went back and spent an awful lot of time training within circus, learning aerials, all the ground-based acrobatics, and then very much within mind to put the two together in order to create true narrative three-dimensional theatre with, you know, and we very much placed our works within real situations, a very recognisable situation, but then the way it's told is quite absurd or surreal. So suddenly a house has people swinging from the rafters and, you know, so it's giving people the in by the recognisable world, but then taking them on a big journey around that.
Is it based on a narrative story, or is it something that you and Jeffrey worked up as an idea?
We created the storyboard. The way we create work is to very clearly storyboard scene by scene what the show is going to tell, mm-hmm. and then start working physically within that. You know, there'll be ideas already on the storyboard as to what acrobatic content may happen, which often shifts and changes because it doesn't service the story in the way it needs to. But we do very much work on it as you would a straight play, where it's got a very, very clear story that must be told. And we're constantly going back to, is the physical work telling what it is that we would want it to say?
It's a very interesting hybrid, you know, the combination of real drama and an emotional story arc. It's not always present in physical theatre, or it's not always really perceivable necessarily in physical theatre. But it sounds as if you have done that very much with this production, if these walls could talk. I read a there's a the Age theatre critic Cameron Woodhead wrote of your performance or your production. It's a fusion of circus and physical theatre. The show skillfully embeds its acrobats into a sense of story and atmosphere, allowing its tricks to reveal the sorrows and wonders of ordinary life. The show has its share of breathtaking feats, but its real achievement is in the depth of drama engagement that's rare in circus. That's very high high praise.
Yes, he's far more eloquent than I am talking about our work. Thank you, Cameron.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
That's really good.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, that's absolutely what we've always set out to achieve. You don't sort of see circus in our shows, although absolutely you were seeing incredibly high skill tricks being performed, but there's never a da-da about it. Mm. In fact, the interesting thing for our audience is they often... they're not sure if they're allowed to clap or if they should clap or they shouldn't clap or, you know, and half the time they're laughing their heads off and the next moment they're crying their eyes out. And it is really easy. We'll often feel the audience taking its time to work out actually what the rules are around the show because, you know, obviously in circus people do this incredible stuff and everyone claps and cheers when they stick their hands out. And in theatre you don't clap as things go on. You wait till the end and then show your appreciation for the work people have done. But you can genuinely feel our audience sort of going, oh my goodness, I want to clap. Oh no, I better not clap. No, I'm, what's happening next?
So, that's pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. It's a lovely form to work in. And we do find often, you know, people very much say they're surprised at the nature of the work and that they haven't seen that form before.
So it's a new hybrid. That, do you feel like you're out there breaking new ground?
Well, we've been out there breaking new ground for quite a few years now. So it isn't. You know, I mean, there's some amazing contemporary dance companies who definitely take you on a journey, and there's some, you know, Circa now create beautifully mesmerising sort of circus that it takes you on a journey because of the beauty in the body, but the music and the things that it is encompasses around it. But I think we are still the only company in Australia who are genuinely seeking to take you on a narrative, reasonably linear story, albeit quite surreal or absurd in its nature.
Sounds fantastic. Well, If These Walls Could Talk is on at Frankston Arts Centre on Thursday the 9th of June. I'm sure if you go to the Frankston Arts Centre website, you can buy tickets for it. Thank you so much for talking to us today. Kate, you're the director of this production, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Kate Fryer, thank you very much for talking to us today on Arts About.
Lovely. Thank you for having me, Sally.
Bye.
Bye.
Our resident critic, blogger of all sorts of things and star of the show, actor Cliff Ellen, joins us again this morning. Good morning, Cliff. How are you?
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, John. Good
morning, Cliff.
I'm good.
Good. Very glad to hear that.
Yes.
Are you happy? Last time I spoke to you, you were a bit grumpy.
Well, I was a bit grumpy because I had a tooth problem.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Has it been fixed?
No, not yet. I mean, it has been fixed. It stopped aching, but I still can't get the bottom plate in because it's swollen. But I'm okay, I'm good.
Great.
I want to talk about that thing on the ABC last Sunday, which was our leaders telling us about what they're going to do.
Oh, yes, was it depressing? I wasn't here, I didn't hear it.
And I was watching it, and look, it brought me back. Years ago, I was running the totalizator at Yarra Glen, a race meeting.
Yep.
And in the middle, there was a jumps race, and all the horses had dropped out apart from two.
Yep.
And they were both draft horses. One was odds of 5-4 on, which means if you put $5 on, you win four.
Not that great.
And the other one was 5-4 against, which means if you put $5 on, you'll get $6.25. So what intrigued me was why people were betting, because they were both donkeys. Why have a bet?
Yeah.
So it's a bit like this debate I saw last night.
Oh.
Where they were both really bad. They just didn't know how to communicate with an audience. Now, both of these people are running around the country, all over Australia, spending a fortune, plus some fella called Barnaby Joyce. And you wonder, why don't they hire Neil Armfield or one of the famous female directors?
To work with them and give them some idea.
Or give them 10th hour a day for 5 days. I could do it.
Yeah.
The directors would, of course, tell them whether it works or not, whereas I'd tell them how it works.
Yeah.
But they are both so bad. Their communication levels are very sad.
It's terrible, very sad, isn't it?
They're both obviously rehearsed and heavily into boredom. So I just thought I'd mention that because we've got 3 weeks to go.
I better have a look at it on demand.
Don't have a look. You'll fall asleep.
I do need to see it.
Have a look at 11:30 at night.
I think, Cliff, unfortunately, we're caught in a situation where we have a politics of negativity. Like, you know, people, they've been told that people that won't vote for them, they'll vote against the other guy. You know?
So yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So they're very involved in pulling the other person apart, which is not great sport.
No, well,
it's very ugly and childish, isn't it?
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, there was a Q&A and they had one for the Libs and one for the Labor. And they were both better than the leaders. I can't remember who they were.
Does anybody know much about the Arts Party?
No.
I'm going to try and get somebody from them on to talk to us over the next week or so.
Sex party, so I don't go to the Arts Party.
Well, we can't talk about that on here, Claire.
No, we can't talk about the arts because, you know, they chop money off and it's sort of depressing.
It's very depressing.
What are we going to talk? Well, Mad as Hell's back. That's
good. Oh, you'd be happy about that.
Oh, well, we've got to have something to have a go at these silly people running around.
Yep. Has it been good so far?
Yeah, it's been good. Not super good.
Oh.
But it's been good.
Good, but not super good.
He's getting a bit old, but he's still the best. Well, apart from Clark and Dore, he's still the best.
Yes.
What have we got coming up?
What is coming up?
Well, Paul Capsis is on at 45 downstairs.
Oh, is he? What's he in?
Quentin Crisp. Big reviews, and from what I'm told, he's fantastic.
I'd love to see that.
Not my style, but he's a genius, this fellow. I'm wondering why, by the way, in the A's I had Ben Podgy, or whatever his name was. I forget. What is it? Ben Podgy. He would do the television reviews each day. And he's very clever.
Yeah.
And they've chopped him. So the A's is, that's another thing I want to complain about.
The A's,
Monday to Friday, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
Some of the writers must have been sacked, I would say, because we're getting others. You know, they say they're local writers or something.
I've given up on it too, actually.
Whinge.
Yeah.
A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, Bloomsday in Melbourne, 15th to 19th of June, celebrates the centenary of some fellow by the name of James Joyce. Apparently he wrote a novel.
Yeah, Ulysses. Have you heard of it?
No, I think this is Bloomsday. Directed by Wayne Pean. Matt Dorning as Stephen Dedalus. A rebel whom Pean describes as cultish, challenging, full of sturm and drang.
What's sturm? Oh,
funny.
Sturm and drang.
Yes.
Aren't they the language? Didn't they write a book about language, sturm and drang? Isn't
I would think it's part of the book. Have you read James Joyce? Got to be good.
No, I actually haven't read that.
That's in June 15th. Sunday, June 19th.
I've read that, I have to say.
Have you?
I've read Ulysses and took the advice, which was to read it out loud to myself.
Oh.
And it was fantastic.
Was it?
Yeah.
Really? Why? Mm. Why is the advice to read it out loud?
Because it's
so
about
poetic?
The sound of language as much as it is a story.
Well done.
Read it.
I only got about halfway, if that.
Right.
And of course,
what about Proust, Cliff? Have you made your way through Remembrance of Things Past?
Well, there were 3 books.
Yes.
Wife bought it for a present. I had 3. I got halfway through the first, but he was still in bed.
Had he had a cup of tea yet?
He was in bed. And somebody said he's always in bed.
Yeah.
And I've heard people on the radio say, of course, it's the greatest book ever read, whereas it's not my greatest, you know.
No.
I like the Russian books. But anyway, that's a question
you.
Of taste.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, that's right. But who else we got? Oh, we've got Rob Meldrum and the wonderful Gillian coming back too. Also 45 downstairs.
Oh, yes, that's the...
From La Mama to, 21st of June, 3rd of July.
What's that called again?
It's called La Monte Anglais.
Yeah, La Monte Anglais.
By Marguerite.
Yeah.
Duras. And it directed got by Lawrence Strangio.
Yes, it got really, really fabulous reviews at the Mummer and sold out. So it would be a great opportunity to go and see that. Yes, that's coming up.
The Glass Menagerie at the Malthouse till July the 5th with the supposedly wonderful Pamela Rabe.
Right, okay.
Probably worth a look. She's pretty good, I must admit.
Hey, what are you up to this afternoon?
Oh, very busy today.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm trying to work out the politics of who to vote for.
Yes, I know, that's
terrible. I don't know what I'm doing this afternoon.
Really?
I'm 80 now.
Yes, he's freewheeling today. It's just...
Well, there's something here that says ruok.org.au and you should start up a conversation, you know, with members of your family and so on. But if I start up a conversation, nobody listens anyway. They talk amongst themselves.
Oh, lovely.
So I'll go and have a quiet beer with the RSL.
Lovely. And what, have you got a song for us?
What is it again? Something by Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, we have.
New York, New York. It's a wonderful song. I love it.
Here it is, just for you.
See you, John.
Nice to see you, Cliff. Well done
on James Joyce, son.
Oh, yes.
I'm impressed.
Time for the news, John.
Okay.
Now, did you know that coming up on at Whistlewood next weekend is the Queen's birthday weekend, isn't it? It's their winter salon and art parade.
Right, Queen's birthday weekend. It's very confusing, that Queen's birthday thing.
I know, because it isn't even a birthday at all. It's ridiculous.
It was someone's birthday once or something.
Yeah.
But the show sounds good and worth paying attention to.
Yeah, go to their website.
Country and Western, the landscape show.
At the MPRG.
Yeah, I went and had a look at that. And there's some terrific work in there. Can't remember who it was curated by, but it's a travelling show. It's going around regional galleries. And definitely worth a visit.
Yeah, I think it's on for another few weeks. I think it's on until the beginning of July, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Is the print exchange, that's also on there too, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Also, Matthew Fagan. Now, Matthew's been on the show a couple of years ago. He's a guitarist. And Daniel Tucheri, classical music concert, featuring performances of works of the classical masters, Vivaldi, Beethoven, Rodrigo, Bach, Paganini.
Is that Rodriguez?
Yes, I think so. Oh, I don't know.
No.
Anyway, it's on at St John's Church, 23 King Street, Flinders, on Sunday the 19th of June. We will get some more details about that, I think, as time goes on. Don't forget, of course, that coming up at the Frankston Arts Centre, If These Walls Could Talks on June the 9th. Get your tickets.
The Ian Potter Centre, Unplugged Live, which is returning, running over 6 Sundays in June and July.
Yes.
It's hosted by the singer-songwriter Jay Laffer of The Panics, Unplugged Live. And we all know what that is.
Yeah, so go along. It'd be great, I think. Dark Mofo, of course, is on very soon. And
Sit still, Sally.
I know, it's so exciting. Anyway, House of Mirrors on in Dark Park with Christian Wagstaff's fabulous, fabulous piece is going to be on in there, amongst all the other wonderful things, of course.
I went and saw Tex Perkins and Charlie Owens.
Oh, while I was away. Fantastic.
Yep. They're terrific performers.
They certainly are.
Yeah,
have a good
some
night.
People in Mornington don't know how to behave in a venue, I'm afraid.
Oh.
I feel like a stupid old man saying that, but on the other hand, it was just like, rudeness.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good. Not especially when it's just not respectful for the performers anyway.
I think Brody was keen, when I mentioned this earlier, Brody was keen to point out that it's the venue's responsibility to look after that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, get the rat bags out, I say. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up on the show via podcast, which should appear on the website sometime during the week. It also repeats the show on Wednesdays at 12, and you'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RWP website. Join us again Sunday next week at 11 o'clock. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we do know what we'd like.
Yes, we do.
Thank you, Brody.
Thanks, Brody.
Security man, Brody.